on the right. I like that
All
on.
right, what's up, everybody? It's your boy Israel here. Hope everybody's having a lovely Friday evening. I'm joined by two special guests tonight. I'm joined by Jeff, the great Jeff, and I'm also joined by Pierce. So how you guys doing tonight? Let me put you on the screen
Good,
here.
man.
Yeah,
I'm
so
like.
while the crowd trickles in here, let me continue what we were talking about because it relates to the DNC convention with Tulsi Gabbard, and we were talking about needing leaders. So one
Sure.
of the things I
Come on.
outlined in that video was that Tulsi Gabbard, she stands up to the DNC when she has to, but she's also able to like not really concede, but sort of how do I want to say this? Negotiate, right? Like compromise is the word. But what I want to get your guys' general, what did you think of the DNC convention? Your thoughts, your general thoughts. Let's
Yeah,
start
go
with
ahead.
Pierce.
Well,
Pierce.
oh, sure, yeah. I didn't watch the DNC, the Democratic National Convention. I saw coverage of how it was covered by indie media, and I mean, I didn't really want to waste my time. I figured that it was going to be a celebration of neoliberalism, kind of Republicans and Democrats, the Washington consensus versus Trump. That's kind of what this election seems like it's going to be. And since we're talking about Tulsi Gabbard, yeah, she wasn't invited to the convention at all. I thought it was goofy that AOC was allowed to nominate Bernie. I heard this on Rising with Crystal Ball and Sagar, but I think it's a really good point. It's like if you want progressives to think that Joe Biden is like going to, go in their direction, you should have had AOC give a speech in support of Joe Biden. But instead, you had AOC kind of nominate Bernie Sanders. So you kind of like, how would you say, compartmentalize the progressive leftist side of the Democratic Party? And it's just goofy. Like, you don't invite Tulsi Gabbard. Bernie Sanders is out there, now shilling for Joe Biden. It's weird, man. I'm
I
not really. I
understand where you're
was,
coming from. Yeah.
yeah, I was not interested in watching it. And Tulsi Gabbard didn't speak, so I
And
really was.
honestly, as somebody who watched it, you didn't miss a lot. There was a lot of, like you said, coming together of Republicans, former Republicans, Bush Republicans, establishment folks, Democratic liberals, and really nothing was talked about, like helping workers or nothing economic either. Jeff, go ahead and chime in, man. What was your reaction to all of this coming from your position?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't watch it either. I heard snippets of it, but basically, they didn't really talk about much of anything substantive. It was mostly, my husband Joe Biden's a great guy, and here's how we met, and blah 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 blah, and he did this nice thing for this little old lady, or what, whatever it was, and so. Like Pierce was, and you were saying, they invited all these Republicans. I think there were four Republicans the first night, and I don't know how many the rest of the week. So it was hard to tell which convention it was. Not only that, but they nominated an accused rapist, and an accused rapist, Bill Clinton, was one of the prominent speakers, and then you had, Bloomberg, who's yet another former Republican and also was an accused sexual predator who had to settle with several of his accusers, just a complete train wreck, that really shows the utter moral bankruptcy of the Democratic Party in all sorts of ways. There was something else I was thinking about, and so oh yeah, well of course they didn't invite. The one candidate who took a relatively anti-war position during the primaries, as Pierce said, they apparently didn't even invite her to the convention at all, from what based on what she said in a tweet I saw, and that's the first time apparently in decades, maybe ever. That someone who won delegates, she won two delegates in Samoa, I think it was, hasn't been invited to speak at the Democratic Party convention. And meanwhile, you had all these Republicans speaking. Of course, Tulsi was accused of being a Republican during the primary, despite her very progressive record on pretty much every issue. And yet, actual Republicans, and not her, were invited to the convention. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point with that. And, it did surprise me. And that's why I outlined in the video that former Republicans like Kasich and all of those people are being invited back in. And I think it's because the Clintons have a lot to do with this. They're tied into the Democratic Party like nobody else. Because, for one, they bailed out the Democratic Party in 2016 when Obama crashed it into the ground with his, hyper derivative finance, Wall Street, MBA people, that the Clintons have to step back in and say, okay, well, if we're cleaning back the party up, we're old school mafia style, so it's our party and our dynasty continues. And so I think we saw a lot of that, the Clinton and Bush former people, the bipartisan coalition there get together because, they do agree on a lot. They come together on a lot of things, the Republican establishment and the Democratic establishment. But so does the Republican working class populist folks and the working class populist folks on the left. Those people also have a lot of overlapping ideas. And we are going to get into all of that, but I want to get into my first segment of the day, and that is the DNC convention and what happened with Biden, because there's an important question to ask, and I want to ask you guys as soon as I play the clip and everything is how can we as progressives or coalition, people who are fond of progressive ideas, get Joe Biden? That's the ultimate question. How can you get Joe Biden to go along with those ideas, right? Not just Joe Biden, but everything he represents, the establishment behind him. So we'll definitely get commentary from our guests here. But let me go ahead and bring up my screen. All right. How's it going, everybody? So the DNC convention wrapped up, and it was all platitudes and cliches. But one question that still lingers is, especially from the Progressive Coalition, is whether Bernie Sanders's coalition, his wing, will be able to successfully get Biden to move left. And how do you even measure what is moving left? How do we measure what is the satisfactory measurement? What is the satisfactory move that was made that we can grade as, okay, this is a progressive win. Now I have two special guests that are going to chime in on this segment. But I wanted to pull up this article, and it's a really great article. You guys should definitely go check it out. Let me pull it up on the screen here. That's not the right one. That's fine. All right, so this is from The Nation. This is from The Nation, and what is the headline? The headline is Biden cannot win or govern as a deficit hawk. Now, deficit hawk and like that term and what it represents is basically, obsessing over the budget. This was popular in the 90s. And one of our guests, Jeff, I'm sure he's got some political history knowledge of that that we can kind of explore. But I want to read this snippet. It says, the journal explained that Kaufman predicted that a large increase in federal spending would be difficult to achieve in 2021. Now, let me give you guys a little bit of context because I think this prior paragraph explains more. So they're basically talking about Biden and the people behind him and what we can expect. It says, unfortunately, even as the candidate was putting the finishing touches on his speech, creating doubts about whether the nominee is prepared to match words with deeds. Quote, when we get in, the pantry is going to be bare. Unquote. Longtime Biden aide Ted Kaufman told the Wall Street Journal in an article published Wednesday. Now, that's obviously referring to the money, the federal budget that they're working with when they get in. So it says Wednesday, the third day of the convention, quote, when you see what Trump's done to the deficit, forget about COVID-19, all the deficits that build with the incredible tax cuts, so we're going to be limited. Which is weird because, I mean, it makes sense economically because he's basically saying that because of what the Republicans did in power, we're not going to have a lot of money. Their whole agenda is to cut, cut, cut. So when they go in there, there's going to be no money, which kind of makes sense. Which kind of makes sense. Now that gets to the meat of this. It says that he predicted that a large increase in federal spending would be difficult to achieve by 2021. Ted Kaufman is not some Biden campaign hanger-on. He's the head of the transition team. When someone is in his position talking about limited options, alarm bells should go off. This is the kind of talk you hear in 1993 when Bill Clinton, after winning the presidencies with a campaign that talked about all about that he would accomplish, suddenly became deficit hawk. Similar in 2009 after Bush. Okay, so and that was the that's really what I wanted to hook everybody on is that Clinton, you know, it's because these people were around back then. These are the, you know, dealers and wheelers behind the scenes of the Democratic Party who are now who taking control back. Kamala's going to be the new face. Biden is just kind of a suit that they're putting out in front. This is all simplifying it, but all right, guys. So I wanted to bring you guys in here to discuss this a little bit further and get your guys' thoughts, right? Maybe you guys saw something in this I didn't outline. Let's go ahead and start with Jeff. Jeff, you want to kick us off here?
Sure. As the senior citizen of this group, I lived through the 80s and 90s, and there was a lot of talk back then about we must balance the budget, we must cut the deficit. There was even a balanced budget amendment. Of course, they never did balance the budget, but basically, it was just an excuse to starve social programs for funds. And they never worried about how much they spent on the military. They worry even less about that now. The military budget of the United States is over $700 billion annually, which is, the majority of the discretionary funds in the budget. And, that's one of the many things that there's a bipartisan, for the most part, consensus on is we've got to have this gargantuan military budget, but Medicare for all, Green New Deal, whatever, that's just spending too much. We can't do that, or we can't even do more modest things like, fix homelessness or, whatever.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. And Jeff, I feel like you're making that point of like, hey, they've been cutting, cutting, cutting. So it's natural for you to say, stop cutting and let's make up for what you've cut as the opposition party. So it just, to me, that just makes sense as like the, even the centrist position, just logically as a human being, you're coming to the situation. That's what a natural reaction would be to that, right? If it's important, something important, then you're going to look at it that way. You're going to say, if you've cut so much, I want to replace that, replenish it, and increase somewhat. So to see this Kaufman fella in this article by The Nation that people should go check out, I should probably drop this link in the chat. I
If
will.
I could just add one more thing, I mean, the
Right.
ultimate
Yeah, go ahead.
illustration of their hypocrisy is that both in 2008 and in 2020, this bipartisan consensus came together that, hey, it's a-okay if we shovel trillions of dollars at the finance industry that in 2008 caused the crash, and in 2020 they just, or for whatever reason, mainly they're in their back pockets, making rich people much richer, and screw the rest of us.
Yeah,
That's
no,
what this thing is about.
I mean that's true, right? And also I think the what I was gonna finish saying is just that it's kind of ridiculous for that fella to just kind of come out and argue, oh well, since the coffers are empty, you know, don't push us to do any kind of agenda that's going to increase the spending. That's ridiculous. Go ahead, Pierce, add your points and then what, you know, whatever you think of this, man.
And I don't want to say that I agree with them 100% because honestly, I don't know too much about like modern monetary theory. But some of the things that Jeff mentioned, whereas this nation always seems to find more money to bail out the finance people, and we always seem to find more money to fund our wars abroad and just defense spending and spending on all the bases and stuff that, takes care of our foreign policy, it's kind of indicative of, and this is what I think is like a core assumption of modern monetary theorists. Like, one of them is that, especially a nation as powerful as the United States, your society looks however you want it to look like. It's not about kind of this myth that, pretty much the entire Republican Party, but also I think this is a myth that some Democrats have bought into, that, oh, we just don't have the money to pay for things, and that's why our society doesn't look better. I wanted to bounce off of something you said a little while ago, Israel. I thought that you bringing up the fact that the Clinton dynasty and the Bush dynasty owning the particular parties is super interesting. That kind of will go along with the point that I'm trying to make. But Obama, you can kind of see him as like Obama and his people. It's like now they kind of co-own the Democratic Party along with the Clinton Party. But the Clinton Party was really like kind of this third way Democratic politics that was getting away from leftism and progressivism. And Barack Obama, the same way that Bill Clinton kind of got in as a populist, he was messaging to audiences that he was going to come in as a populist, as a progressive. That's the same thing that Barack Obama did. So both of these people kind of got into their position of power and have enriched themselves by convincing people that they're like, I'm going to fight for you, people. But then you just kind of take over the party. And what we have to remember with Joe Biden is Joe Biden is older than Bill Clinton. Like, he came up in like that same era of Clinton's third way politics, but he was also like in that system, kind of pushing austerity, pushing war on drugs kind of policies, really, really glad handing with the credit card companies, which is close to the finance industry that Barack Obama was close to. I mean, Citibank practically picked Barack Obama's administration for him. So all these people are very cozy with Wall Street. They have not done enough. I had a friend that I was kind of friendly having a debate with, that he thinks that Barack Obama actually did try to draw down the wars, and I disagreed with him because I think that if you actually wanted to do that, you would use at least the president's bully pulpit, which is like the speaking ability of the president to always talk in front of the nation if you want to push that agenda. And I don't think that it was sincere of I don't think that Barack Obama sincerely wanted to end the wars. But just to kind of finish off with the point that you're addressing, kind of Biden cannot govern as a president of austerity, a president of deficits, and oh, we need to balance the budget. I mean, the budget is always a issue for the other side, right? Like, when the Democrats are in power, for sure, definitely, you're going to hear Republicans be like, oh, here come these tax and spend, Democrats again. That's what the Republicans are going to say. And the Democrats have tried to, do that same attack on Republicans, but unfortunately for the Democratic Party, that's like an attack that kind of lands more with the Republicans using it. Kind of like when the Democrats try to be like strong on military, it kind of falls flat because the uneducated American populace thinks that the Republicans are the party of, balancing the budget and strong military, and the Democrats are, we have a real labeling problem in the United States. So yeah, you can have Democrats try to be, austere Democrats, like just, holding back the money. Hey, we're paying down the budget, but it's going to fall flat on the ears of Americans that are just constantly going to be hearing the opposition party, the Republican Party, call them communists and socialists. Like, so, man, I just really hope that Joe Biden doesn't win. I hope that he doesn't get the chance to be a terrible president. I just hope that he loses.
Yeah, and we'll get into the Republicans because, if Joe Biden loses, there's it's not a sunshines and rainbows at the end for a progressive coalition of
There's no winning.
that book either. So we'll get into that segment, but I did want to address the meat of this question in this segment, which is how to get Joe Biden to move left. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to outline here. For one, people should know Joe Biden is, like Pierce outlined in his comments, from before Clinton, right? Before Bill Clinton, he comes from a past era of politics, and that era still kind of pandered to the unions, to the working class people, It was kind of this ridiculous, facade that was very thin at that point by the time Biden came in. But there's still like roots to that. So there's an article, and I should look for it, where I'll actually try to find it now. But there's an article talking about the Obamas not liking Biden. His group of people looked at Biden like, with condescension. On that note, as I look for this, let me ask you this, Jeff. Would you agree that Joe Biden, to some extent, represents or has this, perception or that he represents working class better than, say, like the Clintons?
Well, that's the perception. I mean, he's always pushing this line about how I was born in coal country in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He even lies and says that he was a coal miner at one point, which that's one of his many lies. But I mean, the reality is he's been a rich guy for a really long time. I guess what people like Obama or the Clintons look down on him for is that he's just intellectually very mediocre. He didn't go to he didn't go to an elite school, so he's just not one of them, so to speak. But in terms of representing the interests of the ruling class, obviously he's very much one of them. And he's been that way for his entire political career.
Right. There's things that move characters like that though. There are very there are ways to move these characters because and you have to see what pushes Joe Biden to do what he does. What who's behind him is probably the most important thing. So this is a great article. I dropped it in the chat. Political magazine, right? The president was not encouraging what Obama really thought about Biden. They had hedged all their bets on Kamala Harris. Because Joe Biden does represent kind of an old school liberal, and Clinton and Obama's, I think that they do look down on the Joe Biden types with condescension. Of course, they look at progressives with disdain. They think progressives are kind of the ill, of the Democratic Party, even though they're making up a larger and larger group of the Democratic Party. So that's interesting. And that's why I think it's important. Even though we haven't reached a one strategy to win him over, it's still important for us to try, right? Because we're trying right now. But I do want to try at least to formulate one for you guys. And then you guys can tell me what you think of it. Based on what we just kind of talked about here, I think it's important for us to root on the Bernie Sanders folks and also to root on the AOCs. At the very least, to act in the way that the right sort of does to figures that you can make analogies to on the right. So, the AOCs of the right and the and all of that. And the reason I say that is because you want to continue putting the pressure you feel like is needed. So whether that's peacefully protesting or doing whatever. But at the same time, I think that progressives need to embrace it to the extent that it's good to have someone in there. It is, I think, good to have somebody in there because if you don't have anybody in there, then there's really nothing slowing that down. But I wanted to get my panel's opinion on here on that because that's at least one thing I can think of, guys, that you can say, okay, this is a way to kind of start swaying Biden to the left. But another, I do want to add, I guess, an important part to that, which is you need to also stop caving in. Like, I think all of this caving in to liberal establishment folks, you need to kind of be more assertive. And that's coming from somebody, and my guest can attest to that, to this, that has been literally playing defense for the establishment liberals the last, what, 2 months? So I'm getting to the point where it's like, look, Bernie's strategy isn't working, the way that I think it should. I think it should be more aggressive. It should be more aggressive in the sense that like you're holding back your cards, what you have. In Bernie's case, it was all of those emails, his coalition, and everything like that. I think they did poorly on that. because they were too worried about the response, the PR. And anyways, why don't you jump in, Pierce, and then we'll continue this, because as you can see, I'm passionate about trying to figure this out.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, where like leftists and progressive voters, they don't have a voice that is fighting for them, and you think that sometimes that could be the case because we don't sufficiently support like the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders characters in American politics, but those characters in American politics kind of do it to themselves, because like I think that progressives and leftists have like this aspirational politics where they want the nation to get better. So we support people to the extent that they're pushing policies that are actually going to lead to fundamental changes that will make America better. But then when they do that, like in a primary and then in the general election, just go ahead and like support like establishment figures, we're kind of left like with like holding a bag that had a hole in it. It's like, what the hell? I thought we had a progressive. I thought we had a leftist candidate that we could see as a leader. And it's complicated, right? Because if I could replace every senator with like a copycat of, I don't know, let's just say like a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren, and every congressman and woman with an AOC, I would, because yeah, that's better than the status quo. But it's tough for me to personally see those people as leaders. And speaking less about AOC, but more about Bernie Sanders, it's like you're already rich. Like you have been in politics for a long time. You don't really have much to lose. And with Bernie Sanders's like kind of like costs being so low, but his potential like what he could be for progressives and leftists, like in the long run, being so high, it's so sad just watching the man, like his spine just caves in. You know, he acquiesces completely to the Biden, like, you know, Clinton Obama establishment. And instead, he tells people to vote Democrat because I guess he's worried about how the mainstream media is going to sell his legacy. So it's weird because, like, I think that the best outcome for Bernie Sanders would have been trying to convince the public. It's like we really have no space. Like, leftists and progressives, we're trying our damnedest in the Democratic Party, but we just have no space. And we have to think about this, that, and the third moving forward.
Yeah.
But instead, it's just like you kind of tease us, like you lure us into the bedroom with like your fucking sexy, like, you know, progressive leftist politics.
Right.
And then
No,
you kind of like,
I
who's in
get.
the room? It's the establishment. It's
Yeah,
like,
I get what
no, I
you're
don't.
saying. I don't know if I would agree with you know, kind of what you talked about with Bernie Sanders. I think he brought a lot to socialists, to all flavors of socialism, and to some great ideas that have been left in the dust for a long time, and he deserves credit for that. I do agree with you. There are criticisms that could be made about his campaign, but I think as a person, he is not the man that has been painted up. That's what happens to a lot of these people who reach that hierarchy. If in fact he tried to yell at everybody to say, I'm you no, know, not me, us. Like he told you, like, it's all on you guys. I'm just a shell, and I can be wrong a lot of times. But you know, I think Pierce, we all can, you know, understand your perspective because we all feel that way when your leaders like let you down. But Bernie is just one, you know, history is full of people like Bernie who tried and failed. And that's the only way that you can keep, you know, trying and getting closer. And that was my point to ask Jeff, is that Pierce brought up the earlier in his comments about, you know, if he can have a room full of Bernie's, Rashida Tlaib's, all these people, whatever, Tulsi Gabbard's, then that would be great. Well, then that's an argument for electoral voting, and maybe that's just another point. You know, now we have 2 points. One is what I was talking about like having someone in the room, and two could be, I don't know, just push the damn button and then keep pushing these people. Whoever it's, if it's a Republican who's advocating for Medicare for all, but is terrible on abortion and other things, I have to make that calculation. My advocation would be progressives. This is good. Yes, he sucks on abortion, but he's gonna, you know, go to bat for Medicare for all. So I have to make that decision. And I'm gonna vote for the guy because he's for Medicare for all, and that's one of my core beliefs. And so I think those 2 points to wrap the segment up, Jeff, go ahead and make your comments, brother.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I were voting between, say, Bernie Sanders and some, corporate Democrat in the primary, or some Republican in the general election, yeah, sure, I'd vote for Bernie Sanders. But I mean, at the same time, we've got to hold him accountable or other politicians accountable when they say things like, "Oh, Joe Biden is a great guy," 2 weeks after he's been accused of rape, or "Joe Biden is my friend and he's not corrupt," when Zephyr Teachout published an article outlining very specifically well-documented cases of his corruption. So you do have to hold them accountable as well.
I agree with you.
Frederick Douglass, a famous abolitionist, said, "Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will." And so, that's the way politics works. You've got to drive a hard bargain. You've
Yeah,
got to
I
say, "If you
think
want my vote, come get it. Earn it. Offer me something.
I agree, and
Buy
I think a
your
lot
way
of people
back."
would agree
That's
with
Georgia.
Jeff's
These
position
Democrats aren't
because
doing that.
that crosses party lines, right? Like, doesn't matter. Like, if you appeal to me, then great. It's like the analogy I made about the, if, okay, your abortion thing might be too extreme for me, but you're for Medicare for all. At some point we have to work with each other, right? At some point you have to get to the point where you're like, okay, we have to work with each other at some point. We're gonna never gonna be on the same agreeing path. At some point, you got to, because democracy is like that. That's one of the disadvantages of democracy, is that you have to get consensus. So, all the benefits, do they, are we, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good, but that's a discussion for another time.
And just like a quick bounce off of that, it's funny though, because like, I mean, I was saying that progressives and leftists have an aspirational kind of politics. They want their nation to get better, but it's like we're building consensus around like these social cultural issues in the Democratic and Republican establishment. So if like many of the people in the chorus that is like the Senate and Congress are just like, arguing on cultural social grounds, and only some people want concrete things from their government to get better, it's like we're already at a disadvantaged position. That's not a case for never, fighting on the electoral politics front, but it's like it's tough to put a lot of faith in it when a lot of these people that we would elect aren't like playing the aspirational politics game. Like I wish they were, just not, because we live in a corporate system.
Right. And if people want to take my 2 points and throw them out, then fine. But at some point, you have to get consensus. Otherwise, you're just not for democracy. And at that point, I can't help you because I believe in democracy. So, but anyways, let's move on to our next
That
topic.
begs the question: consensus for what, though? Consensus around what?
Oh, well, Jeff,
Falling out of
consensus
line.
around anything. If you want something, you have to go to every faction. Especially being a believer of a third party, I would think you understand what I'm talking about.
Okay, but consensus. I mean, you have to be like, you have to draw, red line in the sand or whatever, and say, okay. If you want to have consensus with me on universal health care, great. A living wage, great. I'll support you if you truly, genuinely back that. But consensus around Joe Biden is a great guy, and we need to support him to defeat the most dangerous president in modern history. Fuck that. I don't want
Okay,
that.
I didn't think that this was gonna go,
Risk
Jeff. I didn't think
the
that was gonna
crazy.
spark that debate with you, but I get what
You
you're
got
saying.
to
I guess
restore
that's what wars
consensus.
are for, Jeff. I guess that's what wars are for, is to determine, who ultimately wrangles the other person. Anyways, with that weird transition, let's talk about Republicans now. That's right, folks. You heard it here first. A progressive channel actually going after the Republicans. That's insane. Anyways, on the Republican front, that's right, we're talking about Republicans on Big Talk Little Talk. I feel like the majority support Sam Cedar. My hair's not as curly as his, He's got the natural curls. But we're talking about RNC convention coming up, and the Republicans have been making a mess out of their politics. I don't know what's going on with them. Me being a cheerleader for Trump, yes, on one specific thing, very kind of niche, right? My cheerleading is tailored towards just basically his foreign policy and the way he's treated wars or like Afghanistan and Iraq and those places. He's trying to draw down. The Democrats are trying to obstruct there. But all right, let's go into the criticism. Trump has leaned way too into this culture war thing, and he's losing on the mail-in voting front. We're gonna tackle the culture war thing because that's mainly what the convention's gonna be about. I got a clip for that, and I've also got Pierce and Jeff, two guests of the show, that are going to discuss this further with us. So I'm gonna play this Mike Pence. Look at that, we're breaking grounds on this channel, man. Talking about Mike Pence and going after Republicans as a progressive news covering outlet. Crazy. I'm telling you, I feel like Sam Cedar. But anyways, all right, let me run this clip. If I can pull it up here. I'll just do that. All right.
Was truly remarkable. And it's also remarkable, Brian, that the Democrat nominee for president of the United States never mentioned the violence that is claiming lives and destroying property in major cities across this country. And I'm going to tell you, this president, this administration are going to stand with the men and women of law enforcement with programs like Operation Legend, where we've seen the arrests of more than 1,000 criminals in cities across the country.
All right, that was Mike Pence. Just to give you guys a little taste of that, I should have probably outlined what he was talking about. He's basically on Fox News giving a segment about the DNC not focusing in on the violence going on with the protest. We've made over 1,000 arrests, touting all of the actions that they've done. Later on in the segment, they talk about how if you want a Biden government, just look around in these democratically run states and you'll get your dream. I'm butchering it, but you can already imagine Trump saying that. But then the question is like, okay, but we are already living in this and you're the president. At some point, you got to take some kind of responsibility being the head of the country. So here to chime in on this is Pierce and Jeff. I've got more things that I want to criticize the Republicans on, guys, but go ahead, Pierce. What do you think? What do you make of this?
I agree with the point that you bring up where, I mean, Republicans, they want to sell this kind of they're selling this to like their like law and order kind of constituency that things are going to get worse if you have the Democrats come in. I don't have really too much to say about this. I mean, I just think that the Republican Party, it's like this like vapid kind of idea, like, idealess kind of institution that is constantly trying to sell the other side as worse while they continue just like, selling America like down the road, like, right.
Right. I do have to disagree though, because I do think that the Republicans are very ideological on many fronts, especially economic, and it's unwise. I would say
Just
it's
austerity. That's all they're
unwise.
doing. They're
It's
just cutting everything. Like, that's what they want to do. Like, they don't really
right, but
have
it's a
another
little
goal.
unfair to characterize them that way, is what I'm trying to say. Is that they're just kind of like.
What are they, I mean, what are they doing other than just cutting everything? I mean, they
Well, they've
what
been
they
the
do is they
engineers behind a lot of bad economic decisions for this country.
like, yeah, like Obamacare
Right, but
and
they also come from being against unions. They
cutting.
literally take amendments or are yeah, they literally undermine our amendments with the Fourth Amendment, right, to search and seizure, which was undermined by the Patriot Act. All a Republican. They're well organized folks. Let me bring Jeff. Jeff, do you think that the Republican Party, I mean, I just feel like Pierce may be giving the or underestimating them.
Okay, well, just departing briefly from the theme that we're on here of criticizing the Republicans, it was Biden who essentially
No, we're
authored the
supposed to
Patriot
criticize
Act.
the Republicans.
We're sticking on the
But
GOP.
okay, back to the Republicans. I mean, they like, I mean, they could probably, Trump could probably win this election if he honed in, for example, on this cutting the deficit hawk talk, because he could say, well, look, we've been running huge deficits for 40 years, and we're doing fine. So what the heck is that about? But he's not going to do that. So instead, we have this crazy talk of Joe Biden, who's the most right-wing prominent Democrat in modern history, is a socialist, and he's gonna abolish the police
Right,
and
Comrade
all
Biden.
this stuff. Meanwhile, the Obama-Biden administration are the ones who militarized the police and smashed Occupy Wall Street and Ferguson, etc. Unfortunately, a lot of their base is going to buy this, but I don't think it's going to win over independents if
Right.
that's the way they're approaching things.
Well, look, Pierce, I'm gonna let you chime in here, and then I'll bring up my second criticism of the Republicans and Trump. But Jeff made a good point, and maybe it's a point towards what you're saying about, like, maybe the whole point of the Republican Party now, maybe it wasn't in the past, but today, maybe it is what Pierce is saying, which is just, oh, they're just kind of like the guy that warms up the boxer, what is that called? The shot, the sh not the shadow boxing. I don't know this
What I
stuff.
meant was all the Republican Party does is like cut programs. Like they are trying to sell the nation to the
Right, but now
oligarchs.
both parties agree, so maybe the Democrats are just
Yes,
playing
I
like the
agree.
dummy, like I'm always gonna throw the fight because, or I'm gonna win, but I'm just gonna do what the Republicans do. I can see how you can get cynical and look at it that way, but no, if you have to
Not
understand
cynical, it's
your
realistic.
opponents. You have to, if you're in it to win it, you have to understand your opponents, and I'm sorry, that's just not true, okay? These liberals and these Republicans and corporate, they all are deeper than that, and you have to understand them at the root. The one thing they do all have in common is they're very greedy and they like authority. So those are the two things that you can always expect whether a Republican or Democrat gets in office, at least a liberal Democrat. But the other criticism I wanted to make is that, President Trump has this big issue with mail-in voting, and I just think he's losing on that front. I just think that his constituents is all older Republicans. They're all older Republicans. Let me pull this article up, Pierce, really quickly. You got a minute?
Yeah, I was just going to say to clarify like my other points, like I think that all the Republicans do is cut programs, and I think that they are very organized and they are they're very good at defining the other side as an enemy that like, hey, you got to keep us in power because the other side is so terrible. Whereas I think the Democrats are really bad at telling people how terrible the Republicans are. But man,
They invite them to their convention, so.
yeah, right? So everyone
What's
that's watching,
funny is that we were supposed
look
to
up
talk
Frank
about the
Luntz.
Republicans, but we're talking about how bad the Democrats are at talking about Republicans. We're
Look up Frank Luntz. Look up Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz is the Republican Party. He's this guy that basically he studies words and their positive and negative associations. And what you do is you just pair negative words with the Democrats. And like that's why I called the Republicans like this kind of vapid project of just defining opponents and using like those like phrases that appeal to the monkey kind of reptile brain of voters, and you're convincing people to let them take your shit. Like
Well, I
the
think it's a
Republicans are
game.
hollowing out this nation,
I think
and
it's a
they're very
game
good at
of
becoming
it
enemies.
being easier to take things away than to bring people together and make
Absolutely.
something happen. So with people who are like more progressive leaning, you're introducing these things, right, to protect people and stuff like that. So it's easy to criticize them and tear them apart. It's really easy to do that. So I think that there's an advantage there if you're willing to just sell out to the folks who benefit from that, right? To everybody who benefits from those kinds of things, like taking things away or making it harder and all of that. So if
Such a
you're
good
catering
point.
to those industries and those markets that are paying you and putting the money in your political coff or whatever the saying is, then yeah, it's gonna be an easy campaign, right? Because all you are is basically a troll, and trolling's easy, and people usually are susceptible to that because it's kind of relatable and it's easy to consume.
Quick balance, that's a really good point. Look, it's so hard to demonize possible projects and then that never happening, but it's easy to hollow out your own nation and to just shit on people. And like when your voters, all they want is psychic payout, that's a lot easier to deliver than concrete programs or ending wars and all that stuff. So that's a really good point.
Well, let me bring up the second criticism here, and then I'll let Jeff, you can start. But let me bring it up real quick because I do have an article I want to show people. Let me bring up the bigger screen. All right. So this is coming from the AP. If you guys aren't familiar with what's going on with the mail-in voting, basically what you have to understand is that got started in the Civil War at some point. Like I think it was post-Civil War, right in the middle of it, and we've had it for a long, long time. What the Republicans are good at, and what Pierce is alluding to, is this is fresh. This is a fresh battle, and the Republicans are really good and organized. So they already have their strategy, which is calling it universal mail-in voting. Because Bernie used what? Universal healthcare, right? Yang used universal basic income. So he's like, oh, they love universal. So this is the problem we have, is universal. Even though, Trump, what do you mean by that? Like, even if I'm on your side, what do you mean by universal mail-in voting? Means everybody gets to participate in mail-in voting? Isn't that like just mail-in voting? Like, there's no universal versus non-universal. I think what he's alluding to there is, I think, illegal immigrants. And, you know, that's the dog whistle that we have to dig for when he says things like that. But it's an easy get for his audience, who he is targeting. The problem there, Don, is that your audience is already with you. What you have to do now, since it's so close, even if you want to say all the polls are biased, you're losing by double digits, my dude. So you have to get your together and say, okay, I'm not doing any better just feeding raw meat to my base, red meat to my base. So I have to expand a little bit. And he has. He's not an idiot, because he has. He started to do the weekly briefings. He's showing his face. He's saying, put a mask on. So they're really good at that, but that's another critique I have, is this mail-in voting with the universal mailing. I think he's losing on that because it's going to impact his demographic, which is older voters, Trump voters who voted for Obama. Though that's the coalition you need to ease up on and not recede away from, pandering to. That would be a critique of mine, is that electorally, that's a critique. Don't do that. You have to kind of move in and act like a leader and stop talking about culture war issues, which is what the RNC is going to be all about. So just to wrap this up, let's bring in Jeff. What do you got, man? What did I not outline?
Well, it's shoot, I forgot what I was gonna say.
Pierce, if you want to rescue Jeff, I mean, whoever.
First, I mean, yeah, I'll give you some time to think, Jeff. So I can't wait until the Republican convention, because I might actually watch that. Because if the Democrats are becoming so terrible, I want to see just how much more terrible the Republicans are becoming. So you started talking about the kind of mail-in vote. Could you really quickly, like, maybe give me like a question that maybe I can bounce off of?
Yeah,
Because
so
I'm
the
not,
mail-in vote. Oh, by the way, it is going to get worse, because they have already invited the
I'm
Kyle
not
and
privy.
Karen couple or whatever, with they were defending their
Oh,
lawn.
yeah. You're
So we're
talking
going to
about the
get to see
convention.
that. You know, it's WWE. It's good. It's going to be a good show.
I'm not privy to this like mail-in controversy. Is this like the thing that people are talking about online, where it's like mailboxes are being removed or like
Yes,
something like that?
so people are saying that Trump is trying to rig the election, and others are saying no, the Democrats are trying to stuff the ballots, which goes back to the thing I was saying about how, you got to dig deep for what that means. That just means that, like, oh, they're just going to give illegal immigrants, mail-in ballots. So that's the click for it. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just pointing it out, by the way. I'm not saying if it's good or bad. I'm just saying that's what the Republicans do. That's their game.
The Republicans cheat like a motherfucker. And, like, sure, the Democrats cheat sometimes too, but it's, like, not on the same league. Like,
That's good.
The Republicans are so funny. They like to tell people that illegal immigrants are voting, that dead people are voting, and that this is having, right, like, a substantial influence.
Let me bounce
on,
off what you said,
like,
though, about
American,
the cheating, because
yeah,
it's
sure.
– you're no, no, you bring up a really good point, and it actually goes to my article that I have here.
Gerrymandering, the money.
Yeah,
like,
because they
so
cheat.
Much cheating. Like,
you can say they cheat, right? I mean, you can say they cheat because, for one, they're not only worried for nothing, but they're actually hurting themselves, because 538 has this article here. Let me drop this in the chat.
How are they hurting themselves? They're winning. They're like cheating and winning.
Well, they're cheating and winning, but this one outlines how increased voter turnout could benefit Republicans or Democrats in 2020. And if you ask them, they're not winning, though, because they had to suffer through 8 years of Obama. I mean, you know, it's kind of been a constant back and forth. So they get things, but so do the liberals. It's just that progressives what? Have jumped on the stage, and now our demands are like, okay, who are these new progressives asking for these things? So I think that I wouldn't say the Republicans would say they're winning.
There's so much down ticket races that, like, during Barack Obama's presidency, just like kind of went Republican. Like, Barack Obama did terrible, kind of. And I'm not like advocating that, oh, what would have made things better for this nation is more Democrats. It's more that it's just like Republicans are so terrible that, like,
it's not. I would love Republicans if they were populist. That's the whole issue. The dynamic here is class. And that's why I like the class reductionist idea, because, look, American people, you want to talk about reduction, you know, if we're not on the dictionary for that, we're runner up for that. Like, you know what I mean? But let me point out these. There's only 4 points I want to make from this article. One, they say non-voters are less white, less educated, poorer, younger, and more likely to be women than those who do vote. So based on demographics alone, non-voters sound like a large pool of potential Democratic voters, as Democrats tend to skew younger and more racially diverse than Republicans. But this doesn't account for how the makeup of non-voters can vary pretty dramatically from state to state. A New York Times upshoe, blah, 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 poll conducted in six battleground states last fall found, for instance, that less educated white voters were overrepresented among non-voters in battleground states and were more likely to vote for Trump. So that's just the first point that they make. They make a bunch of other points, so definitely go check this out, and I will drop this in the description afterwards. But it says, like, number two, non-voters lean slightly Democratic overall, but they favor President Trump in some key states. So all of these are good signs, especially if you retain the electoral system or the current, like, the way we do things with the Electoral College. It's all good for Republicans. So yes, they might be winning with all the things that they're doing, but it's like, why are you doing those things if you just you only paint yourself as the bad guy if you're trying to take votes away? In other words, you're trying to keep more people from voting with all these different things that you come up with, rather than just making it easy and having everybody vote for it. Because, like, I agree with their concern for safe voting, but I still think that they're on the wrong on this. And let's wrap up on that. Your thoughts on just, you know, whether it's a good strategy or not from the Republicans to lean in on this mail-in voting fraud thing.
I think they already cheat. And if they keep on cheating and doing more cheating, I don't really think it's going to make a splash with the American people. I feel like Fox News being, like, just way bigger than CNN and MSNBC and kind of just like the cultural zeitgeist of conservative America, like, they're very insular in their thinking. Like, they don't care if it hurts the other side. And I think I'll just let Jeff speak, because maybe he has recovered his thoughts on how terrible the Republicans are related to this issue.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, just a second what Pierce said, you know, although certainly the Democrats cheat in the primaries, because they would never in a million years let somebody like Bernie Sanders win. Even though, you know, we progressives had problems with Bernie Sanders, the Democrats, centrist Democrats had more problems with him. But you know, the Republicans are the kings of voter suppression. That's why we had George Bush There's evidence that the state of Ohio was rigged in the 2004 election. So even though Kerry didn't win a majority of the votes, Bush stole the election then. Trump obviously, or the Republicans obviously stole it for Trump in 2016 with voter suppression in a wide variety of swing states with interstate cross-check and all of that stuff. For them to accuse the Democrats of electoral fraud based on the Democrats pushing mail-in balloting is, obviously the pot calling the kettle black. But it's just interesting, as a resident psychologist here, how in their own unique ways, both parties really appeal to voters' lizard brain, so to speak, classical conditioning. So the Democrats say Russia, and voters are like, salivating,
Literally,
and so forth. And then the Republicans, whatever they say. Sorry.
Breathe, my dude, breathe. Have some
Their
daiquiri.
voters, salivate like crazy, and it's just divide and conquer. The Republicans, the white working class, and
I
whatever.
agree, but I also think that there's like this level of, are you okay?
Yeah,
All right.
Jeff's not okay
I'm
right
just making sure.
now. Jeff is dying before our eyes.
No, I was just gonna
mean,
say that
what do you
I think
think,
that
though?
sometimes like the Democrats are the, it's like one of those things where you see somebody continuously getting beat down because they're so terrible at something that you hate that person more than the person beating them down. It's like you're so
Indeed, yeah.
miserable that I hate you more than the person who's causing that misery.
I
Even
definitely feel
though
that
like it's
last point you
ridiculous, you
said.
should criticize the misery person, like person conducting the misery, just as much as the person who keeps allowing everybody to get slapped down by it.
There's a quote by Hunter S. Thompson in his very famous book, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972, I believe. And I mean, I'm going to butcher it, but it's basically like the Democratic Party is an atavistic endeavor, more an obstacle than a vehicle. It is basically a shit contrast to the politics of Nixon. It's like you are so weak. And I think this is like the most grievous indictment I could have of the Democrats. It's like the Republicans are so terrible, but it's like when you're like such a weak opposition, it's almost like you amplify the terrible person and you make them seem strong because like they're so good at fucking the nation, but you're so bad at defending it that I almost just wish that you, this like terrible, hero that always says that you're gonna save
I don't
us
know
from the
about that. I don't
Republicans.
want to get fucked though. I don't want to be I don't want to be the nation getting fucked.
But look, what if we just had how terrible the Republicans were and we had a strong contrast to them? Or if we just had the Republicans being as terrible as they are by themselves, maybe the American people could clearly see the Republicans for what they are when they don't have this illusion that the Democrats are going to save them,
No,
especially with
because the
how terrible.
strongest coalition that will arise from that will always be the one closest to that establishment. That is the problem with that theory, is that that is always going to be the case. No matter how you play those cards, it's always going to end up like that.
Well,
The
fine. Let's
people are
just
always
keep
going to
going
run
the
to,
route we're going
but
now.
then you're just creating a Democratic Party for them to run to, because they're not going to go to your extreme left. They're not
I
going
mean,
to take the Republican Party version of the Democrats, which is the progressives.
that's a counterfactual to my counterfactual. I mean, if you want to do that, then fine. Let's keep going the way that we're going now with this weak ass Democratic
Well, no,
Party
there's
and
other
this.
options, right? We don't have to do that black and white. There's like we were talking about this entire show, which is that you can do things and put the pressures where you feel like you play the best role. If you're a peaceful protester out there, you know that the liberals aren't go look, the Bidens and them, they're terrible, and criticize them all day. Criticize the Republicans because they're right there along with them, and sometimes they're not sometimes. Most of the times they're the majority of the vote for those terrible policies that we criticize them for. And then shine a light on the people who are doing the right thing. Like Ed Markey, Markey, whatever. He's been in there a long time, but he put out a great ad, and I cover that because I think this is good. This is what progressives need to lean on. They need to do their aggressive tactics, but in a smart way. And advertising and PR are the most important parts of that. in my personal opinion. But I did want to bring up one last topic before we cut out here. And it's kind of a culture war-y one. It's a Tucker Carlson segment. So it's about this Netflix movie. I'm sure you guys haven't really heard about this.
Cuties, I've heard of it.
You've heard of it?
I've heard of it. It's
Okay.
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but let me run this for people and then we'll frickin'
It's for the FC crowd, you know?
Yeah, it's all right. Here we go.
Take a look at the poster. What's the first thing you think of? It's sexualizing young girls, really young girls, not 16-year-old girls, like 11-year-old girls. The poster shows them dancing in cropped dance costumes. Some parents are offended. You should be offended by this. They're trying to get the cuties removed from Netflix. The company says it's a film about an 11-year-old girl who rebels against her family to join a salacious dance crew. Okay. Armin White is a film critic.
All right, there you have it. There's Tucker Carlson's like little morality monologue on it. Look, I love Tucker Carlson. People know on this channel. I love his policies on protectionism. Obviously, do I think he's a racist? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he is. I don't care, really. Anyways, not to get sidetracked on that note. Yeah, I think what he says here is kind of ridiculous, right? Which continues our tone of criticizing the right. Well, no, I agree with him on the fact that it's kind of too salacious and you know, it does. I don't know why it's necessary. I agree with him on that, and I think the right is right on that issue. But I think that it's almost a miss for them because if you dig deeper into this, and I don't know how accurate this is, but people on Twitter have been basically talking about this whole thing. And you know, I guess from the author, I don't know if I retweeted it or not, but it's supposed to be the point that you're supposed to take from this. This is coming from the people who make the movie, is that it's a criticism of the sensualization of, you know, these kind of tween and like young kids, which brings all a flood of very sticky issues to the table with like the Epstein and all of that, right? Pierce, go
Sticky.
ahead, man, before I like train wreck it any further, what do you think of Tucker's segment here?
Cuties, man. Like, so me personally, this is just how I feel. I think that it's weird to have like a, and I'm not gonna watch the series. Maybe it might do something interesting, but just the marketing of it just seems kind of wrong. Like, I don't think that we should be parading like tweens and younger, like you're saying, kind of aged humans in front of like is this supposed to be entertaining for us? I looked at the description of the Netflix show and it was something where it was like these like girls are coming to discover who they actually are and their sexuality and their role as women. So I guess it's supposed to be like empowering, but
Yeah,
I
I'll drop
mean
a link in the chat for people. It's, you
I
know, I
say this as a
mean,
left,
look.
this is a progressive. You can do whatever you want in the bedroom, but I think this is like a little bit too like young. And I don't think that you should have like kids. I think it's unfortunate that like in schools and stuff like that, we have allowed this like conversation to occur where it's like you have kids that can identify as whatever they want to identify as. Because as a kid, it's confusing growing up. And like, I don't think that we should have cultures sending like, hey, you could be like anything on the sexual front so much as like focusing on just like physique and like everybody like work.
Yeah.
Like there are more normal things that you can, maybe that's like too
Well, let me
culturally
ask you this,
conservative
because
for me. I
it's
don't
more
know.
of an ideological thing, you know. Let's take it further. Let's separate this from anything. A morality thing, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. Let's just ask you this question. It because it tugs at my libertarian stuff, and then it also tugs at like my libertarian side, I should say. My libertarian side and my you know, conservative side. On the libertarian front, okay, it's a company that made a movie that we don't agree with and we think it's horribly salacious, but it doesn't violate any laws on the books. So we can all publicly, you know, vent about it. But at the end of the day, I'm just gonna move on with my day. So that's the libertarian side of
Yeah,
me. The other conservative side
I
of me
totally
is,
see.
wait a minute, this is, I live in a society. I don't know if our society should be, you know, like seeing these imageries and like kind of accepting it as like we can talk about this openly. Some things we shouldn't like push into, you know, we shouldn't progress like that fast. So that's my conservative side.
You bringing that up, I mean, I guess I'll just change my opinion. Yeah, I don't think that Cuties is going to be, like, it's going to change the culture, like, far left or far right in either direction. It might be a show that just doesn't really even make a splash. If you want to fucking watch it. I'm not going to watch it. I think, you know, if this is aimed at kids, like, maybe better to have them focus on, like, health and, like, martial arts and learning how to do things with their hands. But, you know, probably we'll be talking about this just this weekend, and we'll never think about Cuties ever again.
Yeah, that's probably what it is, because it's a trend. I just figured we'd bring it up. Jeff, just to finish up on this, the one thing I don't think we addressed is the fact that, you know, the defense side of this is the guy or the creator saying, look, it's a criticism. I'm kind of showing it as like a criticism of it. But conservatives are saying, yeah, but don't even like, why are you even like going there with it? You fancy yourself a person of the arts? Like, do you appreciate arts? Do you think that this, you know, falls into that kind of defense?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched any of it, and I haven't read anything about it. Tonight's the first I've heard of it. So, I mean, if in fact it's the case that it's sexualizing children, that's really problematic. If it's the case that the creators are
It's problematic.
I think but... that, then okay. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's problematic. It just depends on, like, okay, well, if he's coming from a perspective of, like, I'm criticizing it, well, then I think it has to be very, like, I don't know. I've seen kind of, parts of it, and from what I can gather, it does seem like there's a criticism there that you can find in it. Like, okay, he's obviously not fond of it. Like, that's the takeaway. But also, I don't know. I'm gonna go with my conservative on this one for now. It's just like, I just don't think that, you know, especially here in the U.S. Like, why would Netflix release it in the U.S. knowing that we're more conservative than the rest of the world? I don't know.
Andrew Yang spoke with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they talked about how children actors are kind of like...
Right, it brings up so much.
Their development is kind of like shifted in a certain way. And I mean, the people, those young humans that are going to be like the actors in Cuties, I feel sorry for them. But yeah, like you said, Israel, I mean, maybe this just won't make a splash. Like, it exists, and if you want to check it out, you're a weirdo, and probably most people won't check it out. But I just love that sentence that Jeff said, where it's just like, I don't think we should sexualize children. I think that's problematic. That's something that everyone can get on board with, I hope. I hope that we haven't gone so far, like, down the rabbit hole of everyone's allowed everything, where that sentence is controversial. I mean, yeah. That's where I'm coming from, where I'm like, I'm not going to watch Cuties because I think that watching little girls.
So let's dive into the chat. Weird. Let's do some chats here, because King James just talked about it. He said sexualizing kids is not okay. And I guess he means it in any context. So, you know, I think, yeah, you're definitely right on that. And that's why I'm more conservative, Keen, is that I'm like, okay, look, I'm all for like, okay, oh, you know, open expression, whatever. I just think that they're boundaries, man. Like, just like people have principles and values, boundaries are on the same level with me. It's just like, there are boundaries to me on a social level. Like, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a touchy person, but like, yeah, I mean, I can express myself, you know, I'm comfortable around people and everything like that, but I know people who aren't. So they have boundaries and I have to respect them, right? Like, if I, you know, break the boundary, they, hey, I don't like, okay, fine. So I think that when it comes to a society, there's only so much I think we're making way more of a big deal of this, like, you know, Netflix thing. Like,
we're not going to talk about it next week.
It's not going to be brought up, but maybe you should, you know, maybe people, there are a lot of people who think that this leads to, you know, it could lead to more like depraved people, like thoughts in the society. And, you know, with our problem with, you know, what is it, the trafficking stuff. But then again,
if you want to do a big talk, little talk, where we talk about like kind of, I don't know, I guess advancing, progressing social norms around sexuality, I think that deserves, like it's an interesting topic, but yeah, cuties
Right,
in and
because it
of
goes far,
itself.
I mean, it goes back as far as humans, right? Like we've gathered together, these issues have been around forever. But yeah, not to get caught up on that, let me bring up so Brilliant Wonderful has been dropping chats here. He says, we should abolish mail-in voting except for disabilities and out-of-towners. Kamala sent me in as an observer to watch mail-in counting years ago. I saw massive fraud in the country. It's the worst form. Okay, so Brilliant Wonderful, he's kind of bringing up an interesting point. I mean, there has to be an easier way to do this voting situation. Like, why is our voting so damn complicated? Like, do other
It's not
countries have it better?
Election Day isn't even a holiday in
Yeah,
America,
let's
so
start
it's
there.
like
Holiday. Good point. Let's see. So Thomas, Oklahoma says there is no physical evidence or study that proves mail-in voting is even a problem. So now we get the other counterbalance to that. And that's the thing is that, I mean, I don't know, like American Idol was a big thing when I was like growing up. And they seem to freaking do the voting. Nobody seems to question the American Idol fucking winner. Like, oh, they rigged it. That coalition of that one singer behind the scenes, they greased it.
the scale's a little different, but maybe actually it isn't, because I mean people are more into entertainment than they are politics, so maybe that isn't
Yeah, the
such a
scale's probably
difference.
bigger.
Yeah, maybe I'd be interested in seeing what Jeff thinks about it, but like I mean when it comes to like voting not in person, it's an interesting discussion. I'm so negative on democracy these days that I don't necessarily think that we fix things by voting, but I mean yeah, it's interesting. Like it makes me think about it a lot. I mean, Jeff, I don't know if you have any thoughts on non-in-person voting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's regardless of what system you use, mail-in voting or in-person voting or whatever. I mean, they can throw your ballot in the trash. I think I read a figure that something like 20% of mail-in voting votes are not counted. You have similar problems with in-person voting, where again, literally, ballots are thrown in the trash
Put
or
your vote
they
in the trash.
program the machine so the results are
Yeah.
rigged just enough for the establishment candidate,
Yeah, I didn't
or
like the way he dressed. I'm gonna throw that one in the trash.
just
eat
I'm
your own
sorry,
ballots.
we're not seeing your signature matching up with the one that's on your voter registration form. So we're going
Right,
to give
just the
you a
dumbest
provisional
stuff.
ballot, and then we're going to throw that out. There's a million and one ways that they can rig elections, and I don't think it makes a big difference whether it's
I
mail-in
just
or
want to
in.
do it on my phone. Like, can I just get an Amber Alert? Like, yo, this is the issue. Vote on it.
Seriously, like
Well,
one of the
I
things
mean,
I
if
was thinking
it's
about was, can't we just vote with our social security number? Like, is there anything that's secure enough? Like, I mean,
I mean,
if
the Social
Amazon can
Security
figure
number
it out
would
with
make
their.
sense, but then they'd be like, oh, illegals counterfeit Social Security numbers. We can't trust that, you
Oh my
know.
God. If Amazon or like
It's
PayPal
like,
can
fix the
figure
illegal
out their
immigration thing, then
customers'
let's go.
information, I mean, I don't think that illegal immigrants are the problem with like,
Yeah.
elections and like the ways that they steer either left or right. I don't think that illegal immigrants are just like this like cohort of human beings that are deciding the
They're
fate of
so
our country.
organized and covert.
Yeah, right. I love this like Republican theory that the weakest, most vulnerable kind of people are the ones that are like the
Well, they've
most
got
problematic.
billions funding them. They've got billions funding them, and
George
So,
Soros is funding the illegal immigrants.
yeah. All right, so I got to answer this question real quick. Trashman Jake says, "Isn't Ed Markey running against RFK's grandson?" Yes, he's running against RFK's grandson. And Ed Markey, look, I don't know anything about RFK Jr. or RFK's grandson, the third or whoever. Frankly, just
Kennedy,
because
is
he's a
that
Kennedy, I'm going to
okay?
judge him right off the bat. Like, we're tired of Kennedys.
Oh,
We've
yeah.
had too many Kennedys, and I'm actually looking out for him because you might get shot, my dude. Your history, family history is a risk to this country alone as a Kennedy.
I would prefer Kennedy to Clinton or fucking Bush, like, I mean, but that's just me.
Right. But anyways, Markey, I shit. I would vote for Markey in that one, just for that reason. But they say he's progressive. They say this Kennedy's progressive, but I don't know. Let people decide that one. $2 or €2 from £2 from Marcus Will. It says, "Don't put a middleman between your vote and ballot box." Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I mean, with the mail-in voting, you're putting in at least a couple people in there. There's a lot of people handling the mail.
Electronic voting.
So I only vote absentee because I'm not trying to go to some physical location and like be waiting around. So I vote absentee because if I'm offered the option to do something early and remotely, I would rather do that than like do it in person and wait in line for my own
Right.
personal convenience. I first of all, I don't think that like your one vote matters so much. I'm not trying to excuse some of the things that Jeff brought up where it's like they can just kind of throw your vote in the trash, but you can. So I say this as somebody that has always voted absentee. I've never put a vote in like the box. I've never done that. You can check with your supervisor of elections and they tell you whether your vote was received
What
and
do you think of the
counted.
process?
What do I think of the process? It's like doing like three computer things as opposed to doing one in-person thing. Does that make sense? Like you get the ballot in your email, you fill it out like personally, you kind of like scan it, and
Seems
then
redundant.
you have to send it to where it's going to go, and then there's like it's kind of like a tracking number situation, and then they tell you if they've received it or not. Like you can vote absentee and then go to your supervisor of elections. Like for me,
I
it's
mean,
Miami, Florida.
right.
Every county has their own supervisor of elections. So I go to like Miami-Dade supervisor of elections, and it's like we have received your mail-in vote. And
Sounds
then
like
they
you
have
trust
like,
it.
and then they have a copy of the scan that you send them. So it's like, I mean, if they're not counting it, well, fuck, I did the best that I could in this corporate fucking democracy of
Like
theirs.
how, like what can you expect me to do as, yeah,
They had a tracking number, they had the scan, and
right.
it's like, I mean, that's something as
Yeah,
opposed to
and
like
at
you just
that point,
drop your
if
vote in
it's
the
anything
box.
other than voting, if someone were to question that, you'd kind of look at them ridiculously, right? If you explain that same process for an Amazon shipping supply line, they'd be like, "Yeah, no problem. That sounds great. You're actually really smart. Let me shake your hand." But you bring up like voting and you explain it exactly how you did, they'd be like, "Oh, the deep state, you see? This is
I don't
you're an idiot."
Trust this.
But it's like that's where
You
we're
have
at
my
this point. It's
scan, and you
like
said my
people
vote
are
wasn't counted.
questioning such logical stuff like what you said. That seems like a secure way to do it, but it seems too redundant. I would still want to do it easier and with less people, middlemen in the way. Like they were saying.
Yeah, but you're putting a vote in a box, and then I don't know what happens to the box. You don't get a tracking number. There's no scan after it. Like, I mean, all these things are kind of fuzzy. Our democracy is kind of silly anyways. We get corporate outcomes no matter what, so I don't know,
Let me
man.
read this comment here. This is from Ashwin Subrane. Sorry. Thomas, Oklahoma. Oh, wait, no. Sorry. Well, it is from that same person, but I read the wrong comment. Where is it?
I thought we were going to talk more about Tulsi Gabbard today.
Oh, basically it was like, when is the progressives gonna start? Oh yeah, when will progressives distance themselves away from Islamic groups? So same person. The reason I wanted to read that is because I do think that to a certain extent, like, it to me it's like the transgender issue thing. It's like, why do Democrats feel like they have to advocate for every
Group.
small group of people? Like, why do they, like, you could do that without really pandering even,
That's
right?
an easy
But I think he
answer.
means more like radical people of Islam, which like Louis Farrakhan could be, categorized as that, couldn't he? Or is he Christian? No, he's
No, he's
probably not
Muslim.
Christian, right?
Farrakhan
Louis
is. Yeah, he's
Farrakhan.
Muslim. I
What?
believe Yeah, there's speculation
Farrakhan
that he
is
was
Islam.
involved in the assassination of Malcolm X. Yeah, he's
Right, so he's
Nation of
right.
Islam.
Okay, I just want to make sure that's clear.
I was just gonna say something really quick. Man, I'm talking a lot lately. But I think that the
Right,
Democratic
he's
Party would
Muslim, yeah.
rather advocate for groups and rights as opposed to actually advocating for programs that would help people. So it's like black people need more rights, trans people need more rights, women need more rights, Islamophobic people need to tamper down, white people need to check their privilege. Like, when it's a cultural social issue, everyone can have an opinion, and like it's open to constant debate and argument, and all you have to do is take like a moral side, but you don't actually have to like,
yeah, but you have to get consensus anything. That's the hard part, is getting consensus.
You're never going to get consensus on social, cultural issues.
No, but you just need enough consensus to get it done.
I guess. So I think that the consensus...
Well, like Medicare for All, it's polling at 60, 70% now, where it was like 20%.
I was just going to say, like, you build a consensus, but what is happening at the end of the day? You're just getting these, like, Democrats in power. Like, you're not actually getting a better society because actually...
I mean, you can get a better society if the consensus is our society sucks and we need a new one.
So you're trying to make a better society by preaching morality on all of these fronts? Like, I think it would be a lot better to just do like economic policy and like have everyone be squared away and like let everyone think what they want to think, as opposed to telling people what they should think. That's only going to...
But then you can't... But then, I mean, so, okay, but at the end, and at actually, the end of the day, you need to get consensus to get things done.
What consensus are you talking about? Like consensus on these issues of how we should
like
think,
hey,
about
Medicare for All is the right way to go. Let me go out and convince you. And as I get a coalition going, we're going to get enough people to the point where we make it law in our society that everybody gets health care no matter what.
I agree with
that.
And
then you're in a better society.
Consensus, but we were talking about like, you know, how the Democrats, they feel like they have to advocate for everyone's rights. So that's a different issue, and I would agree with you on that sense. I think that to the extent that we can get more and more people, both our politicians but also like voters, to think that Medicare for All is important. I mean, a majority already do kind of see it that way. It's just, you know, the oligarchs in both parties don't want it to happen. I think that that's important. But you're talking about the Islamophobic people versus like the, I don't know, I guess Democratic constituencies that want to fight for, you know, these Islamic groups, because it's easy for them, man. It's so much easier for them to argue and preach morality than it is to actually push those programs like Medicare for All, like you're talking about. And what does it serve at the end of the day? You just get these politicians in power, and how did I win my congressional seat? How did I win my senator seat? Well, I just kept telling people that we need to, you know, treat Muslims better, and black people need more rights, and white people need to check their privilege. But at the end of the day, you're not getting a better society. You just kind of created all these like arguments. One of the most interesting things that I heard was from the smartest female that I ever met in my life. She brought up this point that anti-racism, and you can kind of substitute anti-racism with like anti-Islamophobia or something like that. But probably anti-racism is more apt. It's like anti-racism might be functionally serving the same divisive purpose in our society as racism has. It's just a different form of morality. Granted, racism has a toxic ethic behind it, but the ethic, while being better than actual racism, anti-racism is another form of preaching morality, and it doesn't actually make your society better. It just kind of divides us against each other. I think what the United States should do, if it actually wanted to preach morality, is try to kind of create a common history and story for all of us to share, but we don't try to do that because
we
it's
do
not...
The left just rejects it. It's called patriotism. It's called like American exceptionalism.
But that patriotism and American exceptionalism isn't a story that all the cohorts in our society buy, like,
right? Because they don't participate in it, or they openly oppose it. Anyways, I could get into that, but you make a good point. You do make a good point, because we got to wrap the show up, but you make a good point about it's separating us. That's why you need leaders, though, I think, because they can bring those people together. And that's what I mean when I talk about consensus, is going to those groups and saying, look, you know I represent you, but if I don't make it a big deal because you only make 1% or less than 1% of the population, and I'm focusing on Medicare for All, it's because I care about you. Yes, I do. But I'm trying to get everybody Medicare for All. And in this kind of system, I have to get consensus. And so I have to go around and maybe not talk about this, or maybe, you know, bring this up. So anyways, that's Yeah, that's kind of the
Jeff brought
point
it
that I was
up.
trying to make with that, is that just
Jeff
be.
brought it up. Consensus for what? Consensus for policy, I'm all down to discuss that. But consensus for morality, you're never going to get everyone to agree on the same form of morality because, I mean, our society is just so
Yeah,
gigantic.
but you can agree, but those, but everybody agrees on some things, like healthcare for everybody. You're
That's
starting.
policy.
I don't want to kill. I
That's
don't want
not.
people to get killed. You can get these kinds of
That's
things.
policy. As long as it's policy, as long as, like, if it's morality, I think it's a tough sell. And I think what the Democratic Party does is preach morality as opposed to trying to get consensus, the consensus you're talking
Well, I
about on policy.
agree. Yeah.
Hold on. Jeff raised his hand. Or are you trying to say
Yeah,
something?
Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to get in a word here, guys.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, the Democrats use identity politics to divide people very much. And yeah, if you're genuinely anti-racist, great. But just to go with the example of how the Democrats weaponize Islam, on one hand they're like bombing Muslim countries and at least indirectly and sometimes directly funding radical fascist Islamic fundamentalist groups that are attacking India and China and Syria and so on and on. And then they accuse somebody like Ilhan Omar, who's Muslim, of being anti-Semitic simply because she criticizes Israel. And they call Tulsi Gabbard Islamophobic because she is against U.S. foreign policy and various toward various
Right.
Muslim countries. So it's like they use alleged Islamophobia or alleged anti-Semitism or whatever as a weapon against progressives. So they're using identity politics to divide us, and that's just one of many examples we could give of their doing that.
That's a really good point, and that is true that they do that. They pander to it to get the vote, but then they also can weaponize it against other like coalitions within their party. And that's why I say, like, you just need to get these groups and say, hey, and I think Bernie tried, but I think he failed. I just think he got a raw deal. I mean, Bernie really, it's a sad story, man. So many people love this guy, and I still have a lot of fondness because I think he brought a lot of big issues to the forefront. But we'll have to wrap up the chat on that. Thank you to everybody who send us chats and everything. All of the links that we talked about, I'll try to drop all of them here when I post. Pierce, thank you, man, for joining me, as always.
Pleasure.
Jeff, thank you so much, man, for joining me.
Thank
And
you.
stick around for a second, guys. But yeah,
Like
this
and
is the end of the
subscribe,
stream. Thank you, guys.
PayPal,
Bye.
Patreon,
Peace.
whoever everyone's listening.